Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sustainability Podcast. Today is a special episode. We are going to be doing an energy transition recap of the workshop that happened at the 2024 ARC Forum. The energy transition workshop this year was sponsored by Siemens Energy, which was much appreciated. And today I'm joined by my colleagues, Jim, Rick, and Larry. Jim, do you want to kick us off with what was covered at the workshop?
Sure. We were joined by Darren McGuire, Digital Business Development Manager at Siemens Energy, as well as Edwin Castaneda, Senior Product Manager of Digital Products at Siemens Energy. And I'll just quickly go through some of the points that that really resonated with me. I've a handful of these. The first is the importance of technological innovation. Both Edwin and Darren stressed the crucial role of software and AI in overcoming decarbonization challenges, ensuring grid stability, and optimizing energy systems. They also spoke about the impact of renewable energy on grid stability. Darren led this one, and he discussed the challenges of integrating renewable energy into the existing power systems and networks, and he truly emphasized the need for innovative solutions to maintain grid reliability. Then we jumped in on software, and in particular, software's role in optimizing energy production. Edwin took the lead on this one, and he showcased how digital twins and AI can enhance energy efficiency, reduce fuel consumption, and lower greenhouse gas emissions. Then in the realm of software, we continued to talk about scalability and software's support of that. Both of our sponsors highlighted the escalating investment in software for operational optimization and the adoption of green technologies, with a focus on Siemens Energy utilizing AI in particular for optimization. Then we touched on operational efficiency and its relation to sustainability. We emphasized the application of software technologies in integrating renewable energy sources into the grid, supporting informed decision-making in electricity generation to minimize fuel consumption and emissions. Then we took a turn towards the integration of diverse and increasingly diverse energy assets. We discussed the growing significance of digital tools like AI in energy management, which in turn enable sustainable practices and a flexible, adaptive energy infrastructure. And then we closed our Q&A session with navigating challenges. We all addressed how challenges like decarbonization and grid stability are currently being tackled through innovative software and AI solutions, making significant shifts towards a far more efficient and far more resilient energy ecosystem. That's a brief view of our Q&A with Darren McGuire and Edwin Castaneda. In the interest of time, I'll turn it over to one of my other presenters for the day.
Larry O'Brien here. So I spoke mostly about the impact of sustainability on the process industries, with an emphasis on oil and gas and refining and downstream and so forth. Sustainability isn't just about energy, although that was a huge focus of the workshop. In the process industries, the considerations are somewhat different. There's a lot of significant investment going on right now. So we looked at new processes and plants. We looked at the drive towards net zero emissions for the process industries. We looked at circular economy and worker and process safety as the primary four areas that are impacted by sustainability right now. New processes and plants include things like recycling, you know, new recycling processes, the hydrogen infrastructure, carbon capture and storage, lower carbon footprint production processes. Obviously, with net zero emissions, you have things like flaring reduction, continuous emissions monitoring systems, and also an emphasis on net carbon intensity reduction. And what that is reducing the amount of carbon that's produced for unit of product that's produced. So if you look at new processes and plants, you know, recycling is kind of at the top of the list. There's a lot of new advanced recycling processes, primarily around the area of plastics, where they're recycling plastics with the goal towards either creating new plastic or creating feedstocks to produce synthetic oil or other products. We see most of the large integrated oil and gas companies investing heavily in recycling processes right now. And of course, this includes, you know, all new plants and instrumentation and control systems that are required to build these new plants and processes. Hydrogen is also a very significant investment because you really have to build a total infrastructure around hydrogen. If you were at our forum last year, you probably saw the presentation by the Department of Energy and the World Economic Forum on how they're building these hydrogen hubs in various areas around the world, which is really a whole hydrogen infrastructure, including pipelines and so forth, that are designed to support industry and infrastructure in a given region, right, where it's highly concentrated. The area of conventional refining and chemicals production is also being impacted right now. And one of the examples I used was this Dow project that's going on in their Fort Saskatchewan ethylene complex right now, where they're investing a significant amount of money, over $6 billion, in creating what's basically going to be a net zero ethylene complex. So this is an example where they're, you know, taking an existing process and totally revamping it and making it net zero, right? So that's a lot of investment too, and we're really looking very closely at that. You know, flaring reduction is a huge source of emissions right now, and that's one of the things that we're focusing on too. It's estimated by the, I think it's the World Bank, that flaring accounts for about 7% of overall greenhouse gas emissions right now. So we do see a very significant investment in flaring control and elimination of zero routine flaring. Let's see, what else did we cover? We covered worker and process safety. So if you're familiar with the world of automation, you're very familiar with the world of process safety and safety lifecycle management. And as part of the drive towards sustainability, we do see a much more significant investment in process safety systems and overall, you know, safety programs, as well as safety lifecycle management. And, you know, we also see sustainability as a major growth driver for the industrial and OT suppliers, right? So if you look at the major suppliers out there, like ABB, Honeywell, Siemens, of course, Emerson and others, a lot of them are reorganizing their business around sustainability right now. You know, that's a major business focus for them as well. I probably took up more time than I should, but that's what we covered in terms of sustainability in the process industries. And I'll turn it over to Rick.
Yeah, thank you. Rick Riss here. I'll be speaking kind of from my perspective as a kind of a process expert at a large numbers of different generation sources, and also as a light commissioner in the town of Princeton, Massachusetts. So, but I was going to I covered two topics during the workshop. I covered, first of all, the challenges of decarbonization, and also with Gavin, we discussed a bit of the regulatory environment that is driving sustainability and electric generation and decarbonization. So let me first talk a little bit about what we covered in terms of the challenge of decarbonization. And, you know, and following Darren in Siemens, you know, Darren was talking about the challenges of how the electric grid is going to deal with all of these non-dispatchable power. And we've seen massive amounts of solar and wind, you know, make its way on the grid. In fact, of all the new power that's going onto the grid, solar is number one, wind is number two, and natural gas is number three. And at the same time, coal power plants are being shut down gradually. So, you know, a lot of people have the question, well, how can you generate power when, you know, the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine? But that's exactly the problem that the ISOs and RTOs are facing. And the fact is that they will be getting wind and solar, and they will find ways of how to do this. Now, keep in mind that the electric grid still has a substantial amount of hydropower and nuclear power. So there'll still be a base load in the 20-25% that varies by region. But now all of a sudden you're going to be getting a large amounts of wind and solar. So on the one hand, you can't just put lithium batteries. Lithium batteries are kind of short-term energy storage. So there's a need for this longer duration energy storage issue. And there are a range of new energy storage technologies that are coming into play. There is also the economics tends to drive you to overbuild solar and wind and curtail excess production at times. So what we're going to see is a grid where when you are curtailing solar and wind, that the price of power is basically free. You know, sometimes we've seen the grid go negative. They said, we will pay you to take electric power. It happens very briefly, but that certainly happens. But the so until some of these other longer duration energy storage, that would be things like pumped hydro and compressed air energy storage are in play today, we will see in the future carbon capture and storage with natural gas. You know, that is a way to fill in those gaps. But what you will see is that if you have a gas plant that's got carbon capture and storage, it will be It will only be operating a small percentage of the time. In fact, the peaking units today, some of these natural gas peaking units, they're only running 5% of the time, and they get paid a premium. They get paid a premium to run that 5% of the time. In fact, they will be penalized huge amounts of money if they're not up and running and making full power from a cold shutdown in 10 minutes. We have a power plant here just down the street, and that's their contract. ISO New England says, we will pay you to be ready. You will maintain your equipment. You will know how to get that equipment up and running. So what it amounts to is there are solutions. And part of those solutions are the types of things that Siemens talked about. We need to be able to plan what the loads are. We need to be able to plan what the generation capacity and types of generation and their characteristics. And because renewables are very weather dependent, you know, the weather forecasts are going to play into that sharply. You will not know when to charge a battery, you know, unless you know, well, my EV is empty today, but it's going to be sunny tomorrow. I'm going to leave it empty today and charge tomorrow. And then there's the whole issue of virtual power plants and demand response that can also shift load. So anyway, we discussed, how ISO New England and how other RTOs are and ISOs are attempting to deal with this substantial, complicated problem. It is not an easy problem to solve. Now, the second topic we covered, of course, was regulations, and we talked about federal, state, and local registration. There's also regional registrations here in New England. We have the Regional Gas REGGI, R-E-G-G, Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and that. That along with the Massachusetts state law requires our small munis to get to 50% non-carbon emitting portfolio by 2030, 75% by 2040, and 100% by 2050. And, that's kind of tricky to do. You can't just add solar and wind to your power purchase agreements because you've got a lot of gaps to fill. So you've got to add solar and wind. And so what you do see going on right now is huge amounts of batteries being installed because they can make money on batteries. They make money on batteries by shifting away from peak loads. But the biggest place the munis are making money on batteries is actually by reducing the tariff charges that ISO New England charges for those 1 hour per month peak transmission and capacity charges, the 1 hour a month that your town is, our town, is using the most, the 1 hour a month where our town's electric consumption matched the regional maximum electrical consumption for the month. And so that's an interesting challenge. But in any event, because in our own town, we now are scrambling to adjust our power purchase agreements to meet these regulatory requirements of getting to 50% non-carbon emitting by 2030. We think that's relatively easy to do. It's exceedingly hard to get to 100% non-carbon emitting. You have to have every hour of every day for the whole year covered. And there are various ways of doing that, which we're not, so we didn't solve that problem yet. But in any event, there's a summary of what we talked about. We talked about how the utility industry is going to decarbonize electric power generation with the influx of renewables. And we talked about how influential the regulations are to impact our actions, behavior, and power purchase. Thank you.
Perfect. Well said. Thank you so much. Like said previously, Rick and I presented together on the emerging energy regulations. Rick did a more of a micro level, and I did more of a macro level, and I covered federal regulations across the globe, including the CSRD, the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, and also the ESRS. And under those, I covered the timeline of the CSRD, and we're looking at, by 2029, large companies and small medium enterprises will have to be reporting all scopes of their emissions, scopes 1 through 3, and also information on climate impacts, double materiality assessments, and more financial and climate data. So that's in the EU side of things. Over in the United States, we had the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, which was a huge injection of investment money through tax credits, loans, direct payments for things such as carbon capture investments in the electrical grid. We're seeing also huge amounts of investment in the EV network and infrastructure for charging. So those are more of the carrot side of things. On the stick side of things, we're seeing regulations come out of the state of California, the SB 253, which is the Climate Data Accountability Act. And that one is going to be requiring companies with a revenue over $1 billion in the state of California by 2026. They will have to be reporting scopes 1 through 3, and that will be impacting over 5,000 businesses within the state of California or operating within the state of California. And then outside of the state of California, just this week on March 6th, the SEC final disclosure ruling was voted upon. And now we're going to be seeing basically in stages, companies that have already been reporting to the SEC will now have to report on scopes 1 and 2 emissions, and also climate impact and financial impacts of climate driven events such as a hurricane or any type of natural storm. All in all, we're going to see a mix of sticks and carrot approaches to these regulations. The regulations are really pushing the private sector. And also you have instances such as the Inflation Reduction Act, where the private and the private and public sector are kind of working together in tandem. So we're seeing some really interesting things coming down the line with the energy regulations. So make sure you are staying up to date by, you know, following the Energy Regulation Roundup, which is posted monthly on ArcWeb and also the Sustainability Podcast. That was a summary of my presentation. I think just here in the podcast, you can see the wide breadth of information that ARC covers on the energy transition team. And please contact us if any of the information spoken about today was piqued your interest, and we're all here to speak with you. And we're looking forward to continuing on conversations like this.
Hey, Gavin, one final note.
Yeah.
You forgot that you actually showed up at the at this work with a real carrot and a real stick for dramatic effect to show, you know, how the government regulations are impacting us.
Yep. And not pictured was me going to Target before that and trying to find carrots.
And a stick.
Yes. But yeah, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate your time.